Weekdays, 10 Talk. Entertaining and informative radio for the Sunshine State.
Και χρυσές ελιές, μοιάζεις Ελλάδα μου όπως θες. Φωτιά κι αέρας στο φως της μέρας.
Και καλώς ήρθατε στην εκπομπή Pan-Hellenic News. Όπως κάθε Τετάρτη και σήμερα, πιστεί στο ραντεβού μας στις 4 το απόγευμα, 11 το βράδυ στην Ελλάδα και στην Κύπρο. Καλή χρονιά σε όλους. Δεν τα είχαμε πει από την αρχή της χρονιάς. Ευχαριστούμε πάρα πολύ που είστε και σήμερα μαζί μας. Σήμερα έχουμε μία ιδιαίτερη εκπομπή. Αν και ξεκινάμε με μία ανακοίνωση κάπως δυσάρεστη, πολύ δυσάρεστη. Δυστυχώς ο πρώην πρόεδρος της Επιτροπής Παρέλασης στην Τάμπα, ο Κώστας Ισόης, απεβίωσε πριν από 3 μέρες. Ο Κώστας Ισόης υπήρξε και Γενικός Γραμματέας της Πανελλήνιας Ομοσπονδίας Φλόριδας. Να ευχηθούμε, να πούμε στου καλή ανάπαυση, rest in peace, και στους οικείους του, να πούμε σε τα θερμά μας συλληπιτήρια, τα ειλικρινή μας συλληπιτήρια, και ευχόμαστε ένα ειρηνικό ταξίδι. Επίσης, να σας υπενθυμίσουμε, αυτή τη βδομάδα έχουμε και, εντάξει, μαζί με τα δυσάρεστα έχουμε και πάντα και τα ευχάριστα, έτσι είναι η ζωή, όπως δυστυχώς δεν μπορούμε να τα αποφύγουμε αυτό. Λοιπόν, έχουμε τον χορό των Μεσσηνίων, το Annual Dinner Dance, και σας προσκαλούμε να διασκεδάσουμε, σας προσκαλούν να διασκεδάσουμε όλοι μαζί στην καθιερωμένη χωρεσπερίδα του Μεσσηνιακού Συλλόγου ή Παπαντή, το Σάββατο, αυτό το Σάββατο 13 Ιανουαρίου 2024, στο Safety Harbor Resort and Spa. Το cocktail hour είναι στις 6 το απόγευμα και το δείπνο στις 7. Επίσης, έχουμε ακόμη ένα ετήσιο χορό του Πανκυπρίου Φλόριδας που προσκαλεί όλους στο τιμητικό δείπνο που θα τιμήσει την οργάνωση ΑΧΕΠΑ για την προσφορά της στον ελληνισμό και, τον αγώνα για την απελευθέρωση της κατεχόμενης Κύπρου από την Τουρκία. Θα παρευρεθούν αντιπρόσωποι διαφόρων οργανώσεων όπως της ΨΕΚΑ, ΑΧΕΠΑ, του Προξενείου, των Συλλόγων και διαφόρων άλλων από διάφορα μέρη της Αμερικής. Το δείπνο θα είναι στις 27 Ιανουαρίου, στις 6 το απόγευμα, το Cocktail Hour, πάλι στο Safety Harbor Spa Resort, και στις 7 θα ακολουθήσει το δείπνο. Για πληροφορίες μπορείτε να καλείτε στο 727-644-54-51. Τώρα να πάμε στην εκπομπή μας και στις καλεσμένες μου για σήμερα, που έχω να πω ότι είναι πολύ ιδιαίτερη, πολύ ιδιαίτερο σήμερα το θέμα μας και πολύ ευαίσθητο, καθώς έχει να κάνει με τις υιοθεσίες παιδιών, τις παράνομες υιοθεσίες παιδιών που είχαν ξεκινήσει στην Ελλάδα πριν από αρκετά χρόνια. Και μαζί μας έχουμε την Amy Balch, αλλιώς Αμαλία, και την μεταφράστρια του βιβλίου Τζαγκάθα Ρόντι. Να σας εξηγήσω στην αρχή ότι η Amy έχει γράψει ένα βιβλίο, το My Mother's Voice, το οποίο καταγράφει το ακριβώς τι έχει γίνει, τη μαύρη αγορά με την πώληση παιδιών σε όλη την Ελλάδα, που περισσότερα από 2.000 παιδιά είχαν υιοθετηθεί παράνομα και είχαν πωληθεί στη μαύρη αγορά. Και η ίδια είναι ένα θύμα αυτής της αγοράς. Hi Amy, welcome to today's show, Pan-Hellenic News. Hi Agatha, welcome too.
Hi, hello to everyone.
We're going to speak in English, okay? Because Amy does not speak Greek, that's right?
That's correct, unfortunately. That's true.
But you will learn eventually. I'll start.
I hope.
Well, your story is very extraordinary. And I wanted to ask to start with that. You wrote a book, My Mother's Voice. That title is very challenging and very emotional as well. So, do you want to tell us when did you decide to write this story? When it was, what was the urge that guided you to write the story?
Well, I started with an English version of the book and realized as I was progressing through that, that my heart, my focus was really to write this in Greek for a Greek-speaking audience because of my story and the circumstances and the history behind it. Although it was fascinating for an American audience, I also wanted to expand that and share it with a Greek speaking audience and primarily focusing in Greece as well. And so, as I kept thinking about how to go about doing this and so forth, I reconnected with Agatha on the book, and we collaborated together to kind of rewrite it, to write it in Greek, to translate it, of course, from the English version into Greek. And so I think that's my motivation was just to share my story with people that probably they could identify with more, perhaps in Greece, because this is where my story took place. This is where the history of my life and my genesis and what happened to me took place. So, and I'm sure, many perhaps reading it, and that was my hope and my goal, that those reading it would connect with it on many levels, as well as the adoption, the abandonment, the abuse, that issue, but also not just stop there, but look at the encouragement aspect and hope of the journey, of my journey through this.
Let's talk about this journey. How did it start? You told me earlier you were adopted at the age of 5. Is that correct? From Greece. Your roots
Yes,
are
I
Greek.
spent 6 months in a Athens orphanage being prepared to travel to America, and then at the end of that, I arrived in on October the 30th in 1955, I arrived in America and stepped on American soil for the first time and met my parents because they adopted me by proxy, so I was already their adopted child, and we met at the airport there. Idlewild, I think it was, airport in New York at that time it was called.
How do you prepare a child that is going to be adopted, to get adopted in another country, in another continent, at yet such a young age? I mean, I don't know. It's very hard to conceive such a thing. I mean, and before, where have you be, had you been before the 6 months?
I was before that time, from about 3 months to 5 years, I was in a foster home. And it's pretty evident that I went back and forth at times for medical treatments or care visits for the orphanage, in the orphanage, because I did have a godfather who named me and would come and visit me at the orphanage until I disappeared and he didn't know where I was anymore. But so anyway, the majority of my time was spent in foster care. And I can't answer that question because that's been blocked. Your question about how was it for me to know that I was leaving that home and going somewhere else? I blocked that out. I have no memories of it. All I remember is a man and a woman coming in a shiny car, which was unique for that time in in Patra. And I just remember being taken by the hand by this woman and escorted to the car. I crawled into the back seat of the car and went onto the floor, and that's all I remember. So I don't remember anything else about the actual parting.
Did you actually meet, have you ever met your real mom?
No, because my adoption was by proxy. So I was legally their child before I ever arrived in America. Yeah.
Okay, so you had a very happy childhood in the United States, I guess, after you came to the United States. That's right. You told me before that your parents were very nice to you. Your
Exceptional parents. They were just, I adored my parents. They were, I can't say enough wonderful things about my childhood and about my parents.
How I know it's very difficult for you, and I'm very sorry to ask this question. When did you first start asking questions about your origins?
Think from the beginning, but they were silent. Internal, and as I got older, I had this kind of noise in my head that was always wondering, asking, thinking, and it would be periods of, you go on living, life goes on, and you grow up, and you do the things according to your age. And I was involved in a lot, but it just never died. This noise, this, I got to know who I am. Who am I really? I don't look like anyone. Here in this family, I love them to pieces, but I don't resemble them. Who am I? I know my story, I know of me, but who am I? And that just kept growing and growing, growing with the passage of time. And so it wasn't until I made a few little effort here and there. I was trying to stay connected to the Greek identity as much as I could, and what, but and made I think an effort or two to reach out, but it was to no avail. I didn't go anywhere. But after I had my own child, then everything just started surfacing.
So at an older age.
I was 30. Yes, I was in my 30s. So when all of this started, I started having flashbacks. I started having memory recall. I started having nightmares. I started just things inside of me just bubbled up like, I don't know, it just exploded in me. And so then from that point on, I started making a more active effort to find out about myself and how to go about learning how to go about finding my roots.
Obviously, your subconscious part wanted to gain room, the subconscious part that it was hidden.
I call it that umbilical cord never been severed from Greece. I was very much Greek in my heart, always felt that way, even though I was very Americanized and lost the language. But my heart for my motherland and to find my roots was very huge because that was my identity, and I wanted to know who I was.
So, what were the steps, the following steps? What did you decide to do? Did you decide to travel
Well,
to Greece to search
we
your
traveled to
roots?
Greece. I think we made our first trip in 85, I think it was. Is that when we met you, Agatha? Yes, I think so. And we
You
had
met Agatha in 1984? So it's been
well,
long.
I want to step back a little bit because I was part of a international ministry group that I was the tour coordinator for. And we made two trips a year overseas. Well, this one particular trip was to Greece. And so rather when we were in Athens, I had 2 days free. And my mother and my son was with me. So they were with me. So I hired a taxi to take me to Patras from Athens. And we drove around and tried to find the orphanage and did find the orphanage and did go in. And after some time, the lady in the office manager did find the book that held, my information. And I tease about that because as she was scrolling down the ledger, she came to my name and I about fainted because at that point I realized I was real. I was a real person. Until then, I'd been this fictional character, you know, but then I was a real person. And I got as much of information from them as they would give to me. And that started launching me, propelling me, you know, to go forward. Mm-hmm. And then the following year or two, I don't know, I met Agatha. And my husband and I traveled to Greece. I was speaking at a women's group in Thessaloniki, and we drove down to from there to Patras and went to the orphanage. My ledger was still there where they left it on the pile mm-hmm. of books. Mm-hmm. And talked to them in there, but was just had no satisfaction, no results, no answers. So we spent about, I don't know, a week there, or 3 or 4 days, I think, there. And we came back, and I had not seen Agatha the whole time in the hotel that we were staying at. And the morning we were getting ready to go to catch our bus, Agatha was working the morning shift. Oh. And we had, uncharacteristically of us, we had missed the bus. So we toted our luggage back to the hotel to leave in the lobby, and Agatha was standing behind the desk. And she could mm-hmm. tell I was upset, and she started asking questions. And I didn't want to talk to her. I was just so tired and so discouraged and so exhausted. And, you know, I just didn't want to share my story one more time. Yes. But she kept persisting. Oh. And she kept asking, and she seemed so sincere. You know, so
this is how you met.
This is how we met.
So, Agatha, how was it? Was that the urge that guided you to ask so many questions? One stranger, because you didn't know her.
No, I didn't know her, but they were staying. It was in 1992 because she made previous trips to Greece to Patras, and she was trying to find her. So she came there with and stayed at the hotel Athens in Patras with Richard for 15 days. Mm-hmm. And she was from Alaska. So we were all wondering, I mean, the staff, why they came from Alaska to stay in Patras. It was a little bit an unexplained mystery. Yeah. So, and most of the day they were gone because they were trying to find a connection with people or something. They didn't speak mm-hmm. Greek, you know how it is. So the last day, I was just making the bill and she started crying. So I want to know why she cries.
Yes.
And that's how it started. And she told me the story, and I just got the phone book, you know, the yellow pages, the Greek OT. Mm-hmm. Person said, okay, you have the name. Why don't you check? And then said, I don't speak Greek. And she just followed me her papers. We hugged and she left. She gave me her address. So then we started corresponding, uh-huh. and after that, I just went, after some months, to the orphanage. I didn't know the existence. Okay. They had a dating on Dim, and then there, okay, that time back, I was threatened. I was young. I didn't have any legal right to ask for a person's
sentence. So what did you do? Did you ask for a power attorney?
No, I got the name of the godfather and the foster mm-hmm. family. They were just 2 blocks from my house. I found them. So I sent her the photos in Alaska by DHL. She was thrilled.
Yeah.
And she came back and just tried to be wow. So, you know, and she met. She couldn't believe that this happened. It just happened. My yeah. own curiosity, and I thought it was unfair for her not to tell her what was the big secret, what was behind that. It was that scandal of the illegal baby selling. So for many,
I wanted to stand here and ask, mm-hmm. how did you find out about this scandal about the black market and that was selling kids from the orphanage?
Okay, well, things started with the TV shows here in Greece, mm-hmm. you know, and with the black books, Kartavelis black books, mm-hmm. Which I have seen the show with
mm-hmm. You saw the show first?
I saw that first because I went to the registered office here in Patras, and there was a long queue, and there was a big fuss, and I just said, I'm coming from the orphanage. I don't know if that man that time back thought I work at the orphanage. So he told me what you are looking for. I was trying to trace any information about your mother, something,
yeah.
Just a little something, because I couldn't find a way out. So he told me, wait here, and he led me to the place where the black books were. So I have seen the black books, I have double-checked information, I have seen some court papers about Malia's case, so I started understanding what's going on here, you know. I didn't know about the existence of these black books because, you know, all times back here in Greece and in the public sector, these books are black.
Yes.
But these are the black books. So when I saw the online what's going on with Mr. Padelidis, case that he stole the book from Stylianos orphanage in Thessaloniki. I went in Athens, I found him, then more some association, the SEASIP association have started forming around in Athens, Thessaloniki. Mm-hmm. And Amalia was going back and forth each year and we're trying through TV shows and the newspapers to find a way. So till 1995, from 1992, for 3 years, all this
searching.
Kind of, searched up. And what we did in the UK, I asked for help from lawyers, but there was nothing. So I was searching and searching, and more people came, and we had to form an association. So. Mm-hmm. I found 20 people here because I was helping people, and I have helped people tracing their roots or either from Greece or from America. Mm-hmm. And at that time, Amalia, she can talk how it happened because I was representing Amalia here in Greece.
Yes.
This was the president of the association, but I was replacing her without not being, you know, adopted. So mm-hmm. that was something that we had a legal formation, everything, right? So it was, you know.
Yeah.
So I can't explain how so, coming back.
Amalia, I want to come back to you and ask you, how was all that process? It was a very long process.
It was a long process. It was difficult. It was challenging, as Agatha expressed to you. We were threatened many, many times. I was literally kicked out of the ISS office, both in New York and in Athens, when we went there for being a troublemaker because I was asking to find my family. And I was told that, you know, you can leave your information that you're wishing to be contacted. And if your family is interested and they also leave a permission slip to be contacted about you, should you ever inquire, then we'll let you know. But that never happens. That's just a fantasy world. That never happens with any case. But I have to say, I ended up in Athens the day, I remember, Agatha, the day that whole exploded and the whole news about the black market, and it just like it rocked.
When was that?
Well, when Agatha was sharing, I think it was 92. Yes.
And how did it explode?
Sorry?
How did it explode? How did the whole thing start?
Well, from Nick and Luli's program, lost, finding lost children, their cases, mm-hmm. she showcased and highlighted different stories and such. And so people were already on edge and aware about it. And then it just kept growing and kept growing and kept growing and exploding as more exposure came, you know, to that, more highlighting to that. So then... because of that, then Agatha joined with the Athens CSIP group, and then searching, helping American cases search there in Greece. And I came home and started the first branch for the stateside CSIP to help Greeks there find family members here in America. So my husband and I did that for a while. We found, I think, about 14 different.
Okay, so they- They came in touch with you. They were calling you.
And so we worked back and forth with Athens Patras, I think, and Thessaloniki as well, but certainly Athens Patras and the stateside American.
How many kids were living in the States that they were adopted legally?
Oh, I don't know. I know the total number. I had over 40 cases that I was trying to help solve.
And they contacted you?
Sorry?
They contacted you to help them?
Yes, yes, through other media, the People magazine, through other ways, and it just filtered down. Interviews were given and whatnot, and so I became the contact person here in the States.
So, oh my God, so you had the burden of searching your own roots, and you had also another one to help other people finding their roots. It was too much.
Well, yes, I would pass the cases on to Agatha for those searching, because there was a tremendous amount of Patras babies looking, a huge amount of Patras babies. So I'd pass on to her, and she'd pass on cases as well to Helene in Athens. And so we were working pretty intently. And as this processed and grew, it was very, very interesting to see what came out, to see the reunions, to see the reaction of people. And so it was a very rewarding time. And during that time as well as frustrating, but during that time as well, I was also trying to find my roots. And Agatha was actively searching there as well. And as she stated, she did find my foster or my godfather's family and my foster mother. But we were not successful at that time of finding my biological family yet. And that was another challenge. And she probably can speak into that as well. But there were a lot of threats and a lot of reasons that we backed off for not wanting to go forward with that
About a year. Have you found out who was the head of that whole thing, of the whole scandal? Who did that?
Mean with the black market?
The black market.
I don't know. I think it was a combination of many principals that were involved. I hate to look at of my government, you know, my motherland. I think there were principals involved in the orphanages and the nursing homes, even
the
nursing
there homes were and the orphanages involved. As well. Okay, so key authority people, the public authorities were involved. And I wanted to ask you, how did you find out? Have you ever found out what exactly happened with your case since you were born? Your mother gave birth to you.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
What happens next?
Well, what I was told, because I only know what I've been told and put the pieces together to form, you know, my life's picture at that time, I was just told that that I was abandoned at the orphanage at 3 months, just shy of 3 months of age. And apparently my mother and an uncle came and left me there. They said that she signed adoption release form, but because she was illiterate, she just signed it with an X, and then her brother signed his name to the release form. But this wasn't even known until sometime later, because it went on the premise that she had passed away, had died. And then I was told that she actually hadn't died in childbirth, that she died about a year later. She gave birth to me at 30, so she died at 31 years of age. And then sometime later, other people got involved in the family storytelling of, you know, putting pieces together, and they said she might have lived up to 3 or 4 years. But I don't really know that I agree with that. I think it's closer that she died maybe within a year afterward because of complications, health complications.
So you never found out the real picture of the story, the real...
No, because the family that I did find, gosh, they received me with open arms.
Yeah.
And they were very warm and cordial and inviting. And they did their best to try to share with me what they knew, but they had believed I was stillborn. I was stillborn. So that's what they believed. And I really couldn't get past that. I didn't meet my mother's only living sibling, the mm-hmm. uncle that probably escorted her to the orphanage. Whoa. And that we can talk about if you want. But
yes, of course.
I just had really minimal information on me, and my birth family, my relatives, my extended relatives, the first cousins knew very little about me. And
nobody knew about you?
Nobody knows. Nobody had a picture of my mother. Nobody knows that much about me. They thought I was dead, basically. And the other part to that is that their aunt or their mother admitted on her deathbed that my birth mother had had a child.
Oh.
And that she passed on the information that I had been stillborn to them.
Have you ever met anybody? I mean, your uncle?
I met my uncle. Agatha was there with me.
She
was there at the reunion. And she was my interpreter. She represented me in many, many ways. And she interpreted, the conversation back and forth. And so it was a very stressful meeting. Do you want me to share about that?
Of course. It's crucial.
Agatha can fill in the blanks that I can't recall, but it was a very stressful meeting. He was a very old man. I had between anger and pity for him because of his age. He did not see it. I mean, Agatha would ask tactful questions, and the whole family, quite a few of the family was there, his children, and they were also eager to get to hear what he had to say and get resolution, perhaps, for me as well.
How old you were that time? Your age at that time?
Oh, I was 40 some okay. years old. I'd have to go back in 40.
And him, 40, he was
42 for it, huh?
Him, he was over 80. He was over 80, right?
Mm-hmm. But I believe that the only thing he shared was that I looked like I was Maria resurrected.
Your
that
mother.
I looked like her. That was her. And I think he said she came back dead. Isn't that right, Agatha? I think she said
yes.
That she came back dead. Yes. So I would have to defer to Agatha to some more of those details, but that's all that I remember. And I just looked at this old man and I thought, I'm a stranger to you, but we're related by blood,
yes.
You know? And I think when looking at him, I realized he was a victim of the times just like I was. Oh. So I did have pity on him.
So he wasn't the one that convinced your mother to leave you at the orphanage.
Yes.
But why did he do that? Did he tell you?
Well, it's a male-dominant society, and I was illegitimate. And so I was, I was disposable because the shame factor that my mother brought to the family and to the community. And I have to say that one of the reasons I wanted to be my mother's voice mm-hmm. is that because I believe she was taken advantage of cruelly in many, many aspects, and certainly by employment and employer. And I believe that it was against her will that this happened. It wasn't a fling. It wasn't a, mm-hmm. That kind of thing. So I wanted to set the record as straight as I could and restore her reputation if I could.
You didn't have any siblings, right?
No. No. My mother was a twin, but mm-hmm. and her twin died at birth, but no. No.
Okay. So, all right. So you had just that uncle and some cousins, I guess, right?
A lot of first cousins and second and on and
do
on.
Do you see them? Do you still see them? Or do you have any contact?
I went back two more times, and we had a family reunion, and then I went back for another visit, mm-hmm. Which was a little more strained at that time. And it has been difficult to stay in contact. I think the distance I think the language barrier plays a role. And I also believe that it's just difficult for them to embrace certain aspects of my life. And so they've been very generous, and they've been very, very kind to me, but it just have not had a lot of communication with them.
Yeah, because of the language barrier and the culture barrier, I guess.
And the culture, that is the biggest hurdle. That's the biggest hurdle to cross. Yes, very much so. And it's sad because, you know something, Aria, it's the truth that sets people free. It's knowing the truth about yourself. And it doesn't just set the person, it sets the whole family dynamics, because then you can be open. And so many years have passed. So many people are dead and gone that would really care, but yet the stigma and the shame factor, and what will people say?
I understand. You are absolutely right. At this point, we go to a brief break, and we come back with your book, My Mother's Voice. Okay? And we talk with Agatha as well, and about the whole journey, how you wrote your book, and about the Agatha did the translation, translated the book into Greek, right?
Yes, I did.
Oh, okay. When we come back, we talk about the book, My Mother's Voice. Okay.
This is the TAN Talk Radio Network.
Ελάτε στον ετήσιο κριτικό χορό Σάββατο 3 Φεβρουαρίου στις 6 το βράδυ στο San Nicolas Community Center Tarpon Springs. Live ο Πέτρος Αριδάκης και η μπάντα του από την Κρήτη για μια ανεπανάληπτη ελληνική βραδιά. Επιπλέον, το ταλαντούχο νεανικό χορευτικό συγκρότημα Δροσουλίτες θα παρουσιάσει τον πλούτο της κριτικής χορευτικής κουλτούρας. Ο Κρητικός Σύλλογος Crete Chapter Clearwater σας προσκαλεί το Σάββατο 3 Φεβρουαρίου στο San Nicolas Community Center Tarpon Springs μαζί με την οικογένεια και τους φίλους σας για διασκέδαση και απίθανο φαγητό. Ετήσιος κριτικός χορός Σάββατο 3 Φεβρουαρίου στις 6 το βράδυ στο San Nicolas Community Center Tarpon Springs. Κρατήσει το τηλέφωνο 813-44-55-042.
For your watch batteries, jewelry, clock, and watch repairs, Timekeeper at Countryside Mall Clearwater and Times Square at West Shore Plaza, Tampa. If you have old, broken jewelry you don't use, our master jeweler from Peru, who is with us 23 years, will make a cross or ring that you desire. You have a grandfather or antique clock not working? Give us a call. Timekeeper at Countryside Mall Clearwater, phone
727-797-4411. That's 727-797-4411.
And Times Square at West Shore Plaza, Tampa, established 1981.
Ανακαλύψτε την αυθεντική ελληνική γεύση σε κάθε μπουκιά στο Manos Bakery Cafe. Ο φούρνος μας είναι πάντα ζεστός και έτοιμος να σας προσφέρει τις πιο λαχταριστές και νόστιμες επιλογές. Από μπουγάτσα, τυρόπιτα, σπανακόπιτα, κουλουράκια, καφέδες, μέχρι γύρω, σαλάτες, σάντουιτς και ελληνικά προϊόντα. Όλα φτιαγμένα στο εργαστήριό μας με μεράκι, από αγνά και φρέσκα υλικά. Manos Bakery Cafe at 1971 Drew Street in Clearwater. Καθημερινά ανοιχτά από τις 8 το πρωί μέχρι 7 το απόγευμα. Κυριακή κλειστά. Τηλέφωνο 727-614-9748. Manos Bakery Cafe. Παράδοση τριών γενεών. Αυθεντικό, παραδοσιακό, ελληνικό.
This is the TAN Talk Radio Network.
Επιστρέφουμε πίσω στην εκπομπή Υπάρχει Hellenic News, στο μικρόφωνο η Άρια Σοκράτους. Να σας υπενθυμίσουμε για τον ετήσιο χορό του Πανκύπριου Φλόριντας, που σας καλεί όλους το Σάββατο 27 Ιανουαρίου στις 6 το απόγευμα. Το εισιτήριο είναι $75 το άτομο. Πρέπει να προκρατήσετε το εισιτήριό σας και να καλέσετε στο 727-644-54-51. Επιστρέφουμε πίσω στην εκπομπή μας και στη συζήτηση που είχαμε με την Amy. Amy, we're back to you.
Yes.
And at your book, okay. My Mother's Voice. So, when did you first start writing the book?
Well, about a year ago, I think we kind of started talking about it and getting going in that direction, being actively going that direction to write it, deciding what it is we wanted to include in the Greek version, mm-hmm. and how to go about it. There were unique things to it that I wanted to share and bring out as well that I didn't have highlight as much as I wanted to in the first version and wanted to really focus more on in this one. So with Agatha's help, it actually wasn't a year ago. I think we started in about May, June time frame of just framing it in and kind of trying to look at the direction we were going to go with it and get started with it. And it was accomplished and finished, I think, of end of October. So that was pretty quick for a book, you know. It was put out pretty rapidly. Exactly. You know, at that time, I thought I was going to be over there. And so there were extenuating circumstances that kind of wanted to push the book a little bit forward faster. And so anyway, a couple of things changed that. One being a war that broke out in the Middle East, and then my husband's health, he had to have surgery, and so I wasn't able to go over. But anyway, that's the time frame, pretty much, I think, that we worked within the book.
So, Agatha, when did you start the translation? Right after she wrote the book, you translated, or at the same time while she was writing it?
Well, Amalia has written the book the last 15 years, I can tell, the English version, when she started. So mm-hmm. when I was visiting here to Arizona, we spent many hours, at least the first week of my visit, the morning hours, about 7 hours, were dedicated to
the book,
recording the memories of the book. So I have read the versions, the English versions, a lot of times, many times. So somehow I knew the structure of the book. But regarding the Greek publication, as I have formed my publishing house, and I, as a writer, I'm a writer too. So I tried to form for that book that way of writing that would be Amalia's and that presentation, so that the Greeks, you know, the Greek readership could be open to what she has written. It was her own confession, her own life. So we worked together while I was translating in Greek, and we were changing some chapters, because after many discussions, we ended up that there were things that she hasn't referred, like the trauma, her belief about her mother, what meant to her mother, all these unexplained incidents regarding her own sentiments that led her to hear her mother's voice, to what meant to her emotionally, inherently. I don't know which are the right words to explain it. So we made changes. We discussed that with the editor. We just checked again and again. You know, many parts of it we wanted to be okay and understandable, at least for those who read Amalia for the first time, because this is her attempt. The difficult part was that the book has to be Amalia's book and not my translation.
Yeah, this is the issue that a lot of writers have with translators. Yes. It's a completely different book after the translation. Yes. Actually, it's the translator's book, not the writer's book.
Right. And you know what? I am the reason for this book. So I have some mixed feelings. I know Amalia's story. I remember and I know the details. I know what I've been through, what she has been through. The agony, the pain, the good moments. So I was called to make all these things known to the reader. And in that way, that would be revealed by Amalia's lips. Yeah. So that was really difficult to keep my emotional state and at the same time not to be driven as a translator, you know.
At this point, I want to come back to Amalia and ask her, what is your mother voice? If she talked to you right now, what is her voice? What would she have told you?
Well, that's an interesting question you asked me, because that is, I had an encounter where I was in my house, in my room, reading an unrelated book and not thinking about Greece or my mother. And all of a sudden, a presence ushers into the room and a voice speaks my name, and it has a fluctuation that it calling my name, Amalia, you know, and it sounds Greek. Greek can say my name, you know. So I perked up because I love to hear my name said by another Greek. But anyway, the encounter lasted briefly, but it was three times my name was called, and I believe that it was a call to come back and to go forward with my search, go forward with what I needed to, go back to the village, go back and try to identify and connect with my mother in my mother's village. To be that voice, I needed to connect with her. So I did, and then went to the crypt where her bones are. And I just felt this sense of my mother in a way that how do I say this? I feel that she was happy. I feel through whatever circumstances, divine, angelic, or her voice, I was drawn back to know her. Not my story, not the history, but know her more and connect with her. And I think at that point I did, that she wanted that. She wanted me to connect with her. She wanted me to know that she was, I want to say, pleased with my efforts to honor her, because that's what I wanted to do. And I wanted to set the record straight as much as I could to show honor to her. Mm-hmm. Because she didn't have to give me life, but she did.
Yes.
That's huge.
She did. She was.
So, and then also at that point, I felt like I could just release everything. Release me, release the past, release what happened, the pain, the hurt, and just release her.
Does psychotherapy help to release this trauma? Because we're talking about the trauma.
Yes, right? Yes, the trauma, yes, the hope. And so it was a very poignant moment. It was a very special encounter, very special time that I had. So am I her voice? I hope so. I've been told over and over that I'm her mirror image. That I have her eyes. That's, you know, Matim. I have her eyes. I have her walk. So I think it's a chance that I have her voice as well. And so sometimes I stand in the mirror. You know, I'm 73 years old. This is as fresh as if it was years and years and years ago. So some things never die. But I'll look in the mirror and I'll just wonder if she's looking back at me, you know.
Yes. And I'm sure she's talking to you through this book as well.
So. And I think so. I think the way this book has
interactive.
Yes. And how it was the finished product. And I've read it and reread it and reread it. And I just feel like I hear that. I hear her voice speaking through it.
I want to thank you so much for this confession, because we're talking about the confession here. And to share your life story with us, and about your book, My Mother's Voice. And I want to ask, where can anybody find your book in Greece, in the whole all the bookstores, and in America, where?
Well, right now in America, I'm holding off right now on how to release the book. We've just gotten it pretty fresh, given it to people that are interested and have shown interest and have, you know, handed it out that way. But I have not gone forward yet on how to launch it here. So that's my next focus, what to do with it here.
In Greece,
it is available. I'm everywhere in Politia, and Scrooge. Every big store. Yes, you can find it everywhere.
The name of the publishing company?
Weaving Waves Publication, and the title is My Mother's Eyes.
The voice
is the
voice.
Yes.
Miteras.
Yes.
Well, at this point, I want to thank you both so much for your presence
here. Thank you.
And about the great conversation we had. And for sure, we're going to have another meeting in the future. Okay.
Yeah, thank you very much for hosting us and
thank you so much. And,
I appreciate
it. Great night and happy new year. And
thank you. Happy new year to you as well. Thank you again so much.
Greetings to the Greeks all around the world.
And your mother's voice to reach everybody.
Yes, that's the goal. Yes.
This is the goal.
Thank you, Aria.
Thank you so much. A great day.
Στο
σημείο αυτό φτάσαμε στο τέλος της εκπομπής. Θα θέλαμε να σας ευχαριστήσουμε που ήσασταν εδώ μαζί μας. Να ευχαριστήσουμε και όλους τους ανώνυμους δωρητές, χωρίς τη συμβολή των οποίων θα ήταν αδύνατο να είμαστε εδώ. Επίσης, να υπενθυμίσουμε ακόμα μία φορά τον Κυπριακό χώρο. Είναι το Σάββατο 27 Ιανουαρίου, Παγκύπριου, Φλόριδας, στις 6 το απόγευμα, στο Safety Spa Resort. 6 η ώρα είναι το cocktail hour και στις 7 είναι το δείπνο. Το εισιτήριο είναι $75. Μπορείτε να το πάρετε από να πέρατε τηλέφωνο στο 727-644-5451 ή να στείλετε email στο pancyprianfl@gmail.com. Με αυτό να σας ευχαριστήσω πάρα πολύ. Να σας πω καλή συνέχεια και καλό βράδυ. Γεια σας. We'll be right back.